Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life, I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Out of the loop.
Oh my God.
But that's not for the podcast, unfortunately.
I was going to say, is this for the
recording?
We're recording.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. This is the episode where myself and Leanne take you on our journey of digging deeper into our sisterhood. Sorry for the beginning, I didn't realize we had started recording.
I'm looking forward to hearing this though.
How are you, Lee?
I am a little bit sick, so forgive my voice, folks. But I'm very, very excited. I have some great news.
Oh, let's start with that. Positivity.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I have lots of good news, actually. If we're celebrating small wins. I just delivered my first webinar to Cambridge University about my book. So that was really exciting. I did that online. And
how did that go?
It was really good. People had loads of questions. They asked for follow-up. And yeah, it was really good. My other big news, I have three pieces of big news, so bear with me.
Not you, but triple threat.
Yeah. You'll be very proud of me because someone asked me the other day, a former colleague of mine, and they were like, oh, can you look at this document, give us some feedback, some ideas? And I said, I would love to. I have many ideas. But if you'd like me to give you something robust and comprehensive, you're going to have to compensate me. And that was the first time I put work.
We're not doing things for free, no more. We not. Pay me. Pay me. Yes.
So I was very proud of my boundaries.
Yeah.
And the third piece of news is that I'm coming back to the UK in 10 days.
This is what we love. So exciting. How are you feeling about coming back? Other than seeing me, your favorite person. How are you feeling about being back on UK soil?
Do you know what? I always, when I moved to the UK, I always said, I'm going to go back to Jamaica, Jamaica's home, et cetera, et cetera. But having lived there for most of my adult life, like I moved there when I was 25 and now I'm 40 this month.
There being the UK, yeah?
The UK, yeah. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm turning 40 or have turned 40 this month, I realized that it's okay to have more than one home. And I definitely consider the UK my home. Most of my girlfriends are there, like you and Jaleen and other people. I became who I am now there. You know, I was a completely different human being when I was 25. And I have to say that the people and the community that we've built have helped to shape who I am. So I'm really excited about coming back to my second home.
So you mentioned just then that obviously you're turning 40, yeah, very, very soon. And I wanted to ask you, how does that feel? Because I feel like, obviously, I'm a bit younger than you. And I think I had that landmark of I'm turning 25 and all the anxieties that came with that. And then I'm now approaching 30 and I don't really have anxieties around it per se. But online, I'm frequently seeing, you know, comments and threads like, what would you tell your 30-year-old self and things like that. So I guess as you approach 40, firstly, I'm going to interview about this, actually. So as you approach 40, how are you feeling?
I am feeling many things. The two most prominent feelings are, one, I am having more and more concerns and anxiety about my, like, journey to become a mom, potentially, and, like, having kids and having kids at 40. And on one hand, while I'm really excited because I feel like I'm ready, I'm also worried about the practicality, like, can I have kids and going through that journey, potentially having to go through that journey. We haven't started trying yet. But yeah, I'm nervous about that. And the other part of me is like, I'm so excited. Like, I am absolutely thrilled. I'm really comfortable in who I am. That's not to say that I think I'm perfect, but I'm really happy with the place that I'm in terms of having the level of self-awareness. I think over the past few months, like, you know, I've had conversations with you and other people about various things that are going on in my life. And even though life is not perfect or ideal, I feel comforted in knowing that I'll be able to tackle those things. I feel supported by the people around me. I feel determined more than ever to succeed at the things that I want to do and really doing better at setting up boundaries for myself, like I did in my story early on. So yeah, I'm feeling really excited. Like, I don't actually care what my girlfriend was asking me what we're going to do on the birthday. And are you going to be there, by the way?
Well, it's like I haven't been invited.
No, we haven't made any plans. We haven't made any plans. But I don't know if you're going to be in the country or not, is what I meant. Because I know you have travel plans too. But I was just like, I don't care what we do. I'm going to be with my girlfriends who I miss and love dearly. And that's all that matters. Like, forget Barry for a second. We can celebrate when he gets back. But I'm really excited to be surrounded by my girlfriends on my 40th.
That's good. I feel like you kind of answered my next question, which was going to be, do you have any like anxieties around it? And I guess for you, you kind of touched on your anxieties be about entering the chapter of motherhood or like trying to start that journey. Outside of that, do you have any others or is that mainly the main one?
No, I don't have any other insecurities, I don't think. I think making money is always an insecurity for me. And not necessarily an insecurity because I just think it will always come, but
more like a concern or something you're focusing on.
It's more of a concern. But other than that, no, not really.
That's good. Well, guys, this is Dig Deep. So you mentioned finances, I heard. And my first question is about finances. And that is, when was the last time you were ashamed of your finances?
January 2021.
That's very specific. What happened?
It is very specific. I moved back to the UK after being in Jamaica during COVID, or part of COVID anyway. And I moved to Jamaica under the idea, or with the idea, that I was going to move home and I was going to make a difference and I was going to work for less because I believed in the cause. And it definitely sank my resources because, of course, during that time, I had to have surgery for endometriosis. And it meant that even though I had insurance, I had to pay a shit ton of money myself. in order to have that surgery. And yeah, it depleted my savings significantly. Not completely, but to the point where I was like, fuck, I cannot afford to live like this anymore. While I believe in the cause, I also need to make sure that I can survive and live and be comfortable. And it took me a while to get back to a place that I'm comfortable at now. But definitely at the beginning of 2021, I was in bad shape, I would say.
Is there anything you could have done differently, or like, you know, maybe not got the help you needed?
I could have just let my endometriosis spread and, you know, take over my multiple organs. No. Do you know what? We've talked about this before. You are so much better at saving than I am. So you're probably best placed to give that kind of advice. But I definitely should have been saving more. Like the example of COVID, and my husband says this to me all the time, like, you never know what's going to happen. You could get sick tomorrow, and you always need a war chest to build up. And I love it when you say, Leanne, I'm so broke right now, but I know that you have a lot of money saved, because you're not even considering your savings in money that is money that you can spend, you know? Yeah. And I definitely need to adopt more of those approaches. And I think also one of the things that I've started doing more of, which I wasn't doing before, is investing. So I have like stock portfolios, and I have money that I'm not even thinking about because I just know it's sitting with my investments. So yeah, but you're probably better placed. What are the tips that you have used to survive through COVID and to survive through heavy payments? I mean, you are a homeowner. Do I want to say that? Are you okay with me saying that on the pod?
Well, you said it now, so we're here. I mean, when I asked you the question, I was being sarcastic. I really didn't think there was anything tangible that you could have done, like that, which is what my point was. My point was, obviously, the question was, when was the last time you were ashamed? But my caveat to your point and your example was, I don't think that's a reason for you to have felt shame with that, because you literally was choosing life or death. Like, you was literally prioritizing your health. And the fact that you had the resources to do that shows that you'd have nothing to be ashamed of. You, it wasn't like you was begging from all your mates, can you give me a fiver so I can get surgery? Like, you had the resources there. Do you get what I mean? And I think even with myself, I used to have financial anxiety really, really bad, and I don't anymore. But even with myself, when I have to make big payments and I have access to the money, as frustrating as it is, sometimes I've got to be like, but bro, I had the money. So like when I had to go to court a year ago or a year and a half ago, I had to pay for a solicitor. And I was seeing all these fees, and I was like, who's paying for that? And in the end, I went for the cheapest one that I could find, which was a solicitor I'd used before, and it went really well. But then I had to get a barrister, and I was like, who is paying for this? Who? And as frustrated as I was at the time, because I was just getting cash loss after cash loss after cash loss during that season, I had to be really grateful for the fact that I have access to the money to fund these issues. And that it wasn't that I was going to have to borrow money or get a credit card or take out a loan to fund it. I also think you have to give yourself credit where it's due. And actually, like, our relationship with money is always going to be like up, down, up, down, up, down, because our needs are always going to change. And like you, I started investing this year, which was something that's been on my goals list forever. And it's so interesting just seeing the money come out of my account. Because I'm like, bitch, I ain't seen the return yet. The fuck?
But it's coming. It's coming. I've been watching my ISA recently, and it's going up. But, you know, it goes down and then it goes up, and then it's just, I just ignore it.
Yeah, I don't look.
You just have to ignore it. Yeah.
I don't look. I have to unsubscribe from the emails, and I'm hoping I'm going to check back in 30 years' time. I think I put mine at, when I set it out, I intended to get the money before I turned 50, or like around the age of 50. But yeah, that's that on money.
Okay, I have a very interesting question, also rooted in fear.
Oh, we love this.
What are you afraid to ask me?
I feel like afraid is a really strong word.
Okay.
And I don't really think, obviously, man's a real bad gal from yard. So I just don't think that there's anything I'm afraid of. Not when it comes to like dialogue or asking people stuff, and especially not you. I guess the only thing that I've felt hesitant with asking you is more just like, I've only realized this recently, is more just like how you are.
Okay. I think. But you do ask me anyway.
No, I ask. I'm not going to ask, baby. I'm going to ask. But I mean, like, that's the only question that I've ever had where I felt hesitant, because it's more just like...
Okay.
It's more just like... how can I say it? Okay, so I'm going to... You know me. You know how I am. I have to always give my disclaimer. So my disclaimer is, I don't think, no matter how close you are to someone, possibly even if you're married, but I'm not married, so who am I to say, that the person owes it to you to tell them every aspect of their life. I genuinely don't believe in that. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that's an expectation that people should have. However, because we are so close, it just so happens I know a lot of things that are going on. So if I'm questioning whether or not you are okay, and then I don't know, that then provides a level of hesitancy, because I'm like, well, maybe I'm not supposed to know, so I shouldn't ask. Do you get what I mean?
You already know.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask. But I'm going to ask because I trust in our, I know in our friendship that the foundation is set, that you would just say to me, like, if you didn't want to talk about it, you would just tell me. And I know that we have a space for each other that allows room for that. But maybe if we didn't have a space in our friendship that allowed room for that, I probably wouldn't ask.
Okay, got you.
Do you get what I mean? But that's the only thing I can think of. I don't think of anything else.
I thought it was going to be a question that I would have to answer. I was like, suppose I'm afraid to answer the question. But you ask me that all the time, so it's fine.
Yeah. No. What if I was like, so when did you last kill a man? No. That's fine. But on that note, though, I had a friend once, yeah. And she had a best friend. Let me think of names. Okay, give me two names.
Karen and Becky.
Okay, so Karen, I have a friend called Karen, and Karen's best friend is Becky, okay?
Okay.
And Karen said to me that Becky's been going through some stuff and she's acting quite self-destructive. And it's very clear to everyone around her that she's going through stuff.
Okay? Right.
Now, Becky and Karen are very close in the way that you might say they're each other's person. You know, they got okay. That dynamic.
Yeah.
So... Who is my friend again? Karen.
Karen is your friend. Becky is her right. best friend.
So Karen was saying to me, how do I approach the fact that she's going through this stuff? She's self-destructing. But when I've asked her if she needs help, or if I've asked her if she's okay, she's shutting me out. Like, do you not think that I deserve the right to know? And I thought, and I remember we had a conversation about this, and I was saying, because she's your person and you are each other's person, it's uncomfortable for you not to know. But yeah. You have to just trust that she's going to tell you in the time that she's ready. And you have to just tell her that, like, you're going to be there for her when she's ready to open up. But ultimately, you're aware that something's going on and you want to be able to support her in a way that's comfortable for her. What do you think about
Very
that?
Very true.
Do you think sometimes when there's a really intimate level of closeness that there should be an expectation to be open about what's going on?
I think it's fine to have the expectation, and it's probably warranted. Like, it probably makes perfect sense that she should have that expectation based on the level of closeness. But from my own personal experience, sometimes when people are afraid to share, one, it's because they're not ready to face the thing themselves. And you know your friend, right? Like, you know whether they need to be pushed, or you know that they'll come to you when they're ready. And so I think it's about knowing the person. But the other part of it is that sometimes when people are afraid to see something for themselves, it's also because they might be afraid of the situation itself. Like, it is something that will have a knock-on effect. For instance, I'm just thinking about people who might be experiencing domestic violence or gender-based violence, or have experienced that. You know, sometimes we don't want to face it because we're actually in danger. Sometimes we don't want to face it because we're ashamed. Sometimes we don't want to face it because we're not ready. And so I think be cautious of the other behaviors that you're seeing, like the self-destructive behaviors that she's described. And then also make sure that you're there without making the person feel bad for not telling you, because that's just adding guilt on top of guilt, you know?
Well, this was a while ago now, but I remember just saying to her, like, you just got to let her know that you're aware of these patterns and behaviors, and when she's ready to open up about it, that you're going to be there. And as long as she's not actually self-destructing to the point of, like, death or, like, something, like, really to her detriment, then there's really nothing you can do at that point. Do you get what I mean? Because I was thinking about a situation I was in where I acted like Becky, yeah? I wasn't self-destructing, but I just, like... Do you remember? You actually will remember. I just blocked everybody out and just didn't talk to anyone for like 2 weeks. And it was like, it would have, in hindsight, because of that experience, I now know the better thing to do would to be have just said, I'm going through something right now. I don't want to talk to anybody. And then when I come back, I then make an executive decision on who I'd like to share what I was going through with or who I don't want to share it with. But instead, I just blocked everyone, deleted WhatsApp. And then had people emailing me, asking me if I'm okay. And it was only till after the fact that I was like, that wasn't really nice of me to do that.
The thing about it is that somehow you were still getting work done. So I would get a work email from you, but then I would WhatsApp you and not get a response. So I think I eventually responded to the work email and being like, where are you? Are you okay? But here's the thing as well. Karen could feel like Becky is being destructive in a way that is harmful to herself. And so how do you protect somebody who is harming themselves without violating like that boundary that they're trying to set up because they're not ready to share? You know what I mean? Because sometimes there is that this person is harming themselves, but you want to make sure that they have somebody that they can trust in case they do want to open up, and that person would most likely be you as their best friend.
That's an interesting one, actually. I don't think I've been in that specifically. And when you were saying that, the first example that came to my head was like if someone was drinking to like oblivion as a coping mechanism. And I think if I noticed my friend was doing that, and it's a friend to the dynamic of where I'm saying this is my person, I'm going to move into their house. But I'm not going to do it in a way they think that I'm doing it because I'm moving. I'm just going to find an excuse why I need to be there.
Okay,
because fair. I think when you think of someone who's your person, they don't impact your space. There's very few people in my life where no matter how I'm feeling, them being in my space will not impact me. Whether I'm feeling really low or really happy, they just won't bother me. They it's just like they're not here because we've got that level of closeness. So I feel like if it's someone like that, I will find a reason to be in their house and I'll have to support them that way. But when I notice they're going to go for a drink, I'll just distract them. Let's go Sainsbury's, buy some stuff to make a cake. Like I'd have to do things in a really practical way until they're ready to have a conversation, I think. I think I'd have to just move in. Because it's like, what do I do? Do I do that or do I call your mom?
Well, I was going to say, sometimes it involves calling your parents, I don't know, or calling a family member to let them know or to check in to see if that person has noticed anything or...
Because I remember one of my friends actually was in a situation and her mom ended up finding out. One of my friends was in a situation. So this is let's say their names are Abby and Anna. So Abby was in a situation. Anna is Abby's best friend and I am Abby's other best friend. So Anna called me, but I was not in London. Like I was nowhere near. And so when she done that, her mom ended up calling me like, why didn't you tell me what happened? And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this wasn't something that was for friends. This was something that we should have extended to her guardians for help.
Yeah. But it's, you never know. You do the best that you can with the information that you have, really. Mm-hmm.
Okay, my next question is, how do you know when I'm really listening to you?
How do you know when I'm really listening? You're always listening to me. I know. Sometimes we have moments when we are on the phone and not talking to each other, not doing anything, like we're in our own separate worlds. And more specifically, whenever you are washing the dishes, you stop listening.
When I'm washing up. Leanne, I'm always washing up.
Not always, but sometimes when we're on the phone and you're washing dishes, and it's funny because you can do other things, like you'll go and get a package, you'll be running up the stairs, you'll be catching the train, and you'll be listening. But for some reason, when you start washing the dishes, you go into a world of your own.
Not the sensory overload.
So I would say it's more the exception to the rule. Like, when can I tell that you're not listening? Because you are typically a listener. Okay. My next question is, oh, I know this one without looking. Describe your first kiss.
My first kiss.
Give us context.
Okay. So my first kiss, I feel like this was my first kiss. My first kiss, I was in year 7. Okay. I was at my friend's house. I was outside her house. And there was a guy there from my school. And we was talking, was on the doorstep and was sitting down. And I think we've always liked each other, maybe till today, actually. But never in a way that's like a serious like. More just like, we both find each other attractive. Never like,
okay,
in any sort of way. And then I can't remember how we actually ended up kissing. But I remember kissing and being like, oh, like, oh, should I have done that? I just feeling like it was something. Because at the time, you're like 11, 12. Do you know what I mean? And it was literally just a peck. Like, there was nothing more from it. But I remember at that time thinking, like, what does this mean? I've just kissed him. Like, what's going on? And it didn't mean anything, actually. No. It didn't change our relationship at all. It didn't make us closer. It just wasn't a thing. It's just something that happened. And then that was the end. But it was a nice kiss.
Oh, he had nice lips. Okay. Can I tell you the wildest story? I don't think I've told you this story before.
Tell me. Is it about your first kiss?
Yes, it's related to my first kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in my mid-20s, I had just moved to the UK. I was here for the summer in Jamaica. And I was seeing someone. He was kind of like my permanent sideman.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we were in relationships or out of relationships, we used to tap each other. So I was at his house, and he used to run a poker game out of his house at the time. Anyway, fast forward, long story short, is somebody was watching or monitoring the poker game, and they tried to rob my friend, my side man.
Like, as in, like, like serious criminally rob, or like banter?
Yeah, like seriously criminally rob. And Leanne, as it happened, just, I was there. So these three young guys came in with like machine guns. I was the only girl there. It's a very crazy story. Three guys came in with machine guns, made everybody lie on the ground. They took everything. They took my purse. They took my jewelry. The only thing they didn't take was the car keys, because I managed to have the wherewithal to like stuff them in my pocket, in my jeans, like in my jeans. It's not just in my pockets, but and anyway, so they left, and there were a bunch of us in the house, and one of the people in the house was there potentially renting a room. He was trying to rent a room or whatever from my friend who lived at the house. Anyway, he said he was going to leave to try and figure out from the local like gunmen or donmen what was happening, whatever, whatever. He came back with like a slew of men, blocked off the road, and started accusing me of robbing everybody. Because I
had never
the guy who was trying to rent the room. He was one who left and then came back. So he came back, tried to accuse me of robbing everybody. Long story short is that he had actually set up everybody to get robbed and then pinned it on me because I was, you know, there at that he had never met me before, and I was the right person at the right time to just pin it on in order to detract attention from himself. Why is that person my first kiss? So the guy that set me up for the robbery is the first boy that I ever kissed in life when I was around the same age as you in 7th grade.
And it took me a while. That kiss boy. He came back for revenge.
How crazy is that story?
That's crazy.
I don't think he remembered me, and I didn't remember him until someone said his name, because obviously I guess he looked different from when we were in seventh grade, because now we're like 27, 28. And I think he's a little bit older than me as well. But yeah, it's small world. You never know.
So did people actually believe it was you?
No, nobody believed it was me, because they were all my friends. They realized I wasn't even living in the country. Who am I robbing, really? I don't have that kind of...
Not with the gunmen.
Yeah, like proper machine guns in my face. It was very, it's the wildest thing that I've ever experienced, or one of the wildest things I've ever experienced.
Yeah, that does sound very mad. I'm actually laughing about it, but it's actually not funny.
It's funny now in hindsight, because my first kiss tried to set me up.
Did I tell you about the time when I thought, oh no, I don't know if I'm going to share. I thought like my mum would call me like, why didn't you tell me this happened? The time where I was held at gunpoint and someone stole my car.
No. What?
Okay, since we're doing story time, let me explain the story. So I was at uni and there was a guy that I used to like date or talk to. Okay. Let's call him
Benny.
Okay. And then there was a guy that I was talking to, but I knew it was never going to be anything. He wasn't intimate or anything like that. We just literally spoke, okay? I spent a lot of time with him. And he didn't go to the uni, but he was in the area doing non-educational work, okay? I went to uni in Bournemouth. So for those that know, you know. What we're going to call him, he's called...
Teddy.
Wow, Leanne.
So... I don't know.
Me and Benny have stopped like talking, moving to each other, all of that good stuff. So me and Teddy have gone to a party. This is months on now. We've gone to a party and he didn't really want to come, but he came as my plus one. And when we left, I was in my car and Benny comes to the window with Benny's friend. And Benny's like, can you please drop me home? Now, Benny doesn't live in the direction of where we're going, but I was just like, yeah, I don't mind. I'll drop you home. I looked at Teddy. I said, Teddy, are you okay? And Teddy said, yeah, no problem. Drop him home. He didn't obviously know who he was. Right. But it just wasn't that deep between me and Benny for me to think that it was being disrespectful. Like, it didn't really progress to anything. Okay. So anyway, I go to drop
Benny
home. And when we get there, I'm dying for the toilet. Like, dying, yeah? So as we park up, I'm like, I need to use the toilet at yours. And he's like, okay, cool. So when he goes, I get out of the car and you shouldn't really drive barefoot. So I'm not saying it's something that should be encouraged, but I had no shoes on. And I drive barefoot. I ran with him to his room, went toilet. And then he ended up just talking to me like, Shan, like, what's going on? Like, why happened to us? Like, what's going on? And we're there talking. And long story short, we end up lipsing for like 2 hours.
While Teddy's in the car.
But it didn't even feel like that. It felt like 5 minutes. So I look out the window. And when I look out the window, maybe it was an hour, but it was a long time. I look out the window and Teddy's still in the car. I'm like, cool. Then I end up falling asleep.
Shan.
I wake up and I'm like, oh my days, my car is gone. My car is gone. Okay. My phone is in the car. My shoes are in the car. Shit. The keys are in the car. So I'm like to Benny, we need to call my phone now because Teddy has stolen my car. So we call my phone. Teddy answers the phone. He's like, do you think I'm an idiot? Where did you leave me in the car? What was you doing? And I was like, I just went to the toilet. And then I fell asleep. And he's like, do you know what? I hope he doesn't ever hear this podcast, yeah, because watch when he hears this.
Because he's going to know.
He was like, oh, you just went to the top. What? And I'm like, oh, I've got like spring ball today. Like, I need to go back home and get dressed. Like, I've got plans. Bring my car back here by 10. And he's like, no, I'll bring it here at 3. And I'm like, no, it needs to be here at 10 or I'm calling the police. So anyway, he comes. But when he comes, Benny's like, oh, should I come down with you? And I'm like, no. Okay, this guy will kill you. You stay here. I'm like, don't even go to the window because I know he's going to ask me where you are. So I get to the car, and as I go to the car, so I've approached the driver's side. He is not in the driver's seat. Somebody else is. And I can see as I've approached the driver's side, my car is packed out with different people that I don't know. Yeah?
Shit.
So I'm now like looking up out the window of Benny's room, and I can see Benny looking, and I'm thinking, this is gonna get long. So I had to put on my big girl pants because I'm like, I can't seem like I'm scared. I have to seem like I am tough and I'm not scared of any of these. Remember, there's four people in my car, you know, four. So I could open the door and I'm like, get out of my car.
Bad girl, Shan.
I'm like, get out of my car. Get out of my car. I'm like, who is this? I literally turned into one of the characters from Kidulthood or Top Boy. I'm like, who is this in my car? So I get in the car, and then he puts a gun to Teddy is behind me.
Okay, I was going to say, is Teddy even in the car?
Yeah, he's behind the driver's seat. And he puts a gun, like, here. Like, through the middle bit, yeah? And it's just here. And he's like, where's the guy? Where's the guy? And I'm like, I don't know where he is. Like, I don't know. He's like, tell me where you do. And I'm like, it makes no difference. There's security downstairs. You can't get in. So after, the story's going to get long. So after all of that time, I then leave it. And then he ends up being like, I'm going to tell you where to drive. You need to drive here. We're driving. So as we're driving, I've clocked that we're driving towards my house. And this whole journey, these people are literally arguing about me, yeah? So one guy's like, you know you like her, so stop acting stupid because you're just going to end up sorting it out. Then there's a girl on the passenger. I forgot to tell you about that. There's a girl on the passenger.
Fuck me.
And she's like, oh, like, just allow her. Because the whole time I'm driving, the gun is like this, you know, like to my head. I don't even know if the gun is real. I can just see gun. And he's like, oh, you taking me for a dickhead. So I'm like, where are we driving to? And he's like, we're driving to the hospital. And I'm like, for why? And he's like, because I'm going to kill you and leave you outside.
Oh my God, Shan, that is trauma.
No, it's mad. And then we drove down my road, yeah, and where I used to live, like, me and my best friend Ella shared a flat. And the flat, we lived on the ground floor, and the window of it was, like, massive, and we always used to have it open. So if you're driving past and you bib, you'll see. So yeah. I remember I slowed down just praying Ella was going to be in that kitchen getting ready or, like, getting a drink. She wasn't there. We got to the hospital, and yeah, to wrap up the story because it gets very long, in the end we got to the hospital and all his friends jumped out and he ended up coming to the front and talking to me, and then it was fine. But that whole process was very scary, and it's mad, yeah. This is why I think trauma is so interesting, is because I didn't really feel like I was ever impacted by that situation, and it's only remembered it happened the other day when I was talking to my friends, like, oh, do you remember when the guy had the gun? And they were like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I came home.
You didn't
home,
tell anybody.
I saw you. No, I was like, I came home. I saw you. And then we all got dressed up, went to summer ball. And they were like, that's not what we remember. That's not what, like, we don't remember that. But yeah, long story short, I feel like I was talking for about 15 minutes. That is the story of when I was held at gunpoint and had to drive my car. But he forgave me. And then he told me that I'm a witch. And that the only way he'll believe that I'm not a witch is if I go to North London and meet his uncle, because his uncle will know if I'm a witch or not.
This man is clearly on drugs, first of all.
He's on something.
He's clearly on something. Like, I can't, yeah. But that is also a crazy story that you have definitely never told me before.
Okay, next question. How do you think our differences complement each other?
I think they complement each other for the purposes of this podcast, first of all. Because we always try to find the balance of light and serious. And I think we complement each other in that way as well. Like, you obviously are great at finding the humor in things. I tend to be more on the serious side. So I think we balance each other in that way. And I think we bring out different sides of each other. Like, you make me laugh all the time. I think I probably make you laugh, but for different reasons. And I think our opposites are not so far apart that they're complementary. Like, we're not on the extreme of anything. Like, you're funny, but you have the capacity to be serious. I am serious, but have the capacity to be funny. I think even when it comes to, like, the work that we do, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, like, there is a very clear-cut division in terms of, like, I think both of us are creative, but you're probably more on the, it's funny because you always think of yourself as quite shy, but you're far more, like, gregarious and outgoing than I am in many ways. And I like the behind the scenes kind of administrative, logistical, that kind of piece. So yeah, I
definitely feel like with DBW, all the stuff you hate, I love. And then all the stuff I hate, you love. Yeah. And I was listening to a podcast the other day. I think it was The Receipts. And Tolly and Audrey were talking about how, I think they had the Shits and Giggles podcast on. And I think Fuhad asked them, what's the worst thought you've ever had about each other? And I think Tolly said something like to Audrey. Tolly said her worst thought about Audrey was that Audrey doesn't want this enough. And Audrey was like, her worst, she couldn't think of a worst thought basically. And hers would probably be like, Tolly, you work too much. And it reminded me of our dynamic because Audrey was basically saying the way they work is different. So it appears different to both of them in the same way that you have like a love language. So she was like, Tolly will be like all guns blazing, but Audrey's doing work, but he doesn't really feel like that because of the way she does work or like the pace of which she's doing work. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were talking about how like they like and appreciate different things and how if like they have a business meeting and then Tolly can't go because Tolly wants to sleep, she feels really comfortable with like Audrey going. And I was like, that is literally me and Leanne.
Yeah. 100%.
Like if we have a business meeting or something to do, I feel like we both feel equally as comfortable being like, oh yeah, that person go or that person go. But then I think we have natural strengths that are very different in like the work that we do.
Definitely, definitely. That fully describes us for sure. Okay, my last and final question is, this has been a very good episode. I've enjoyed this one. What advice would you give the 14-year-old me?
I think it is kind of hard because I didn't know you at that age. But I think based on who you've become now, so I'm going to answer it and I'd love to know what you think you needed to hear at that age. I think that would be interesting to compare the two. But I think I would say to you at 14, if I think about what I was like at 14, I think I would tell you to celebrate your differences, acknowledge your wins, and trust that it's going to be okay. That's what I would say. Because especially as if we're thinking about if I was to go back in time now as someone who doesn't know you and that's just a piece of advice I needed to tell you, I feel like that would translate and manifest into who you are now. What do you think you needed to hear at that time?
I don't know. I think...
Where was you at that time? What was going on?
I was 14. My parents were... So I was like... in ninth grade, third form, somewhere around there. My parents were going through a separation, like shit had just hit the fan between the two of them. I was that typical teenage girl who wrote in her journal and only wrote the bad things and all of the sad things and how it's gonna run away and how I hated my life because my boyfriend wouldn't, you know, I couldn't see my boyfriend as much as I wanted to, or at all, because I was having a telephone friendship at that point in time. And I think actually what I needed to hear, was it's okay to fail. Because I think somewhere around there, my fear of disappointing people really started to like fester, and be more rebellious. Like I was quite a goody two shoes. I tried to be rebellious every now and again, but I didn't have like the guts to do it. And actually I wish I had broken more rules, and not necessarily in a bad way, but like I always questioned, as the older I got, I started to question authority more, and I wish I had done that from a younger age.
I think that's the rule thing is really interesting, because I remember I went to my friend Hendu, yeah, and they were talking about who was the naughtiest at school, and like in unison everyone was like me, and I was like I was never excluded. I was never in seclusion. I only got detentions. And fair enough, at one point it was every day. But I was a very good student. And I used to always think, like, I don't know what it feels like to bunk, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it feels like to do certain things. And there was a time in my life, I definitely knew you at this time, and I'm not sure if I expressed it to you, but there was a time in my life where I just thought, like, I should have lived life more wild. I should have done more things on the edge. I feel like I've healed from that now. I think it's okay, and I also realize that you know I can be wild now, but I think the idea of wanting to rebel or wanting to just do things, you know, a bit on the edge is interesting, because I always think you get older then you feel like you can't do certain things, or you don't have the luxury of doing certain things and blaming it on I was only 14. Because it's like, bitch, you're 30.
And now I just don't have the energy. Like, now I'm just like, oh, who can be bothered to, like, mm-hmm. break the rules? And yeah, so I think when you're young, it just feels a little bit more exciting. And I think by not breaking the rules, I missed out on some valuable lessons that I could have learned a lot earlier. You know, so yeah, that's it from me.
Well, guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you liked it. It would be really nice if you could like, share, and subscribe. And maybe give us a 5-star rating if you think we deserve it, because we do. And yeah, all of that good stuff. Until then, goodbye.
Can I just say that our 2 robbery stories deserve 5-star ratings? That alone. Okay.
That was trauma that we shared with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.